running to the altar like a track star. Can't wait another second.
Cause the way you hold me, hold me, hold me, hold me, hold me, feels so holy. They say we're too young and the pimps and the players say don't go crushing. Wise men say fools rushing, but I don't know.
Welcome back to Ottawa Now. We were just talking about City Councillor George DeRuze, who took his Zoom call on the road during audit committee. It appears that he plopped his laptop on the passenger seat, and he was driving around on camera. No one else seemed to notice, except for one guy on Twitter who was watching at home, who then noticed that the city councillor was playing with his phone as well as participating in a Zoom meeting with over-the-ear headphones. We'll chat with that guy coming up on the show. Bizarre story. Usually people who are trying to text on their phones and, you know, no one's perfect. I'm a human. I've done it. You shouldn't do it. The best thing to do is just put your phone away, put it in a purse, put it somewhere else out of reach. But, you know, when people do it, they normally try to hide it because they'll get chastised by other drivers on the road. They know it's not safe. They try and hide it away or they look down at their laps. Bizarre that he's doing it while he's on Zoom. But the purpose of being on a Zoom call is that other people can literally see what you're doing. That's the whole point. So we'll chat about that coming up on the show. As always, you can reach out anytime during the program, OttawaNow@CFRA.com. We just spoke earlier in the program to a palliative care doctor who was talking about the toll COVID-19 has taken on doctors and frontline care workers. And he admitted that the pandemic is weighing on him day and night.
Amidst this pandemic, it's very hard not to bring this home to my wife and family. I think of the people who have contracted, COVID. I've known many people who have passed away. I see the impact that it's had on people experiencing vulnerabilities like homelessness and poverty, and it keeps me up at night. I worry about, the future of this country and the long-lasting impacts that this pandemic will have.
That was a conversation I had earlier with Dr. Naheed Dasani. He's a palliative care physician, so he deals with death and dying and loss every single day. But he said this has really weighed on him. And he knows that other people are in the same boat. New research suggests that he's telling the truth, that he isn't alone. A study released today shows that healthcare workers are feeling anxious and burned out. I should mention that this was a peer-reviewed qualitative study. It was sponsored by QP. What it showed was that there was a lot of concern in healthcare workers of bringing the virus home, getting infected, getting their kids sick or their parents sick, infecting vulnerable residents. That was another top concern. And there was a significant feeling of exhaustion, people citing staff shortages, chronic need to be at work. And as well, one of the things the researchers pointed out was that they had difficulty convincing people to participate. In the end, they said 10 people agreed to undergo interviews, but another 5 people dropped out because they were fearful that they would be penalized at work. They were worried they were going to get into trouble. Joining us right now to chat about this, I have Dr. Doris Greenspoon on the line, CEO of the Registered Nurses Association of Ontario. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much, Christy, for having us again.
What do you think about the results of this study?
Well, I am not surprised at all. I know Dr. Naheed, he's an amazing palliative care physician, by the way. We hear the same amongst nurses. Nurses are, first of all, they're so exhausted that who has time to participate on anything? They're giving their all. They are... If you look at every single sector, so if you look at long-term care and the situation in long-term care that is absolutely catastrophic with no action on bringing more RNs, more RPNs, more PSWs, the staff are hanging by their nails to provide some resemblance of safe care to residents. Despite their efforts, they're seeing every single day more and more residents dying simply, not only from COVID, but lack of resources, quite frankly. And yet we're waiting and waiting. So that in itself is demoralizing. Then when you look at ICUs, the RNs working in ICUs, the nurse practitioners working in ICUs, the physicians working in ICUs, you are looking at a workforce that also is exhausted because the hospitals are almost at capacity and some over capacity. And then when you layer that, Christy, on the fact that this is the second wave, right? So people were tired to start with, and we didn't increase the resources in the summer when Minister Fullerton should have done it at the time. And you know, then that becomes so more complicated. The issue is this. Then they walk onto the street, and when they see some of our lovely neighbors or friends or families or whoever, right, walking as if nothing is happening here, going in mass to stores in the weekend, gathering despite that they were told not to gather, that is like a knife in the back. So, of course, people are exhausted and are grieving all the time, both because of exhaustion, because of wanting to do good, and then having, you know, slow movement in terms of replenishing resources by the government, plus the public, most of them doing the right thing, but as Dr. Vera has said in your own show at times, not doing the right thing, and that's like a slap in the face.
Whose fault is this, in your opinion, when you're talking about the burnout, the anger, the exhaustion, the lack of staffing? Who do you feel is to blame?
So let me start by saying that I don't envy any government anywhere in this country or the world these days, because I want to be fair on that. It is the most difficult job to be the one that holds the wallet and needs to relieve money to do ABC. However, people run for those positions, so they have a responsibility. And the responsibility is not to wait 2 years, which is what has happened with long-term care, because we have been warning that this was happening already for 20 years. We have been warning, and act, and still we are not acting. So on that, I put the Minister of Long-Term Care. She has the wallet for long-term care, and now we hear that the relief will only maybe come, the plan will maybe come at the end of December, and will be over 4 years. Well, by then, quite frankly, not only we will lose all the seniors that are currently in long-term care, if not most of them, because it's a tragedy, but also all the staff, because they're not going to hang on. And also the public, I mean, I didn't wait for a government to tell me use the mask. Quite frankly, my family, my entire family, even the three-year-old used the mask before we were told. So we share also in that responsibility. But the public,
but is it the public's fault when people were initially told, don't wear masks, the masks are for first responders, don't wear them, don't buy them, the first responders need them, and we don't want you buying them all up?
Yeah, no, so that you are talking about the surgical mask and all that.
Right, but I'm just saying it's probably some mixed messaging for people.
You're totally right, yeah. So, I mean, that is government responsibility. When you govern and you hold the wallet, you have the responsibility to provide the all the resources that are necessary to protect oneself in terms of the staff. And you also have the responsibility to provide safe staffing, which we don't have. I mean, you saw what happened with the Canadian Armed Forces. They had mental health and social support right there, Christy, embedded within the teams that they sent to nursing homes. These nursing homes, in general, have none of that. Right now, I'm looking at IPAC, infection control. How many of the nursing homes really have been ever funded for infection control, and how many are actually having any of that? I'm doing a survey as we speak, because they don't have the resources, and they're putting the hospitals to help them, but the hospitals, Christy, are full. They cannot help anybody.
I want to ask you about Dr. David Williams. You've been very critical of Dr. Williams. Yesterday, Premier Doug Ford's government put forward a motion to extend his contract to next September. Here's the Premier.
Well, he's brought us all the way through this, along with Dr. Yaffe and their whole team. So I want to again thank all of them. And I just do not ever believe in changing a dance partner in the middle of a dance, especially when he's an incredible dancer like Dr. Williams. He's a great doctor, and I give Dr. Williams, Dr. Yaffe, and the whole, I could list off all the doctors. I'm not going to. I give them all the credit in giving us guidance.
What's your reaction to that?
Well, I said to the premier already, depends who is your dancer, and I don't concur with him that he's an incredible dancer. Maybe the premier has seen Dr. Williams dancing tango, and maybe he's referring to that. I dance tango very well, so I will try that too. But this is not about tango. This is about actually being the orchestra director of a major pandemic, and no, Dr. Williams has not performed. He started late. You spoke about the PPE. RNO begged the government to give the PPE, the personal protection, first to the nursing homes, because we knew, Christy, that if we didn't, many residents will die because they have not a chance. With the complex conditions of residents and their vulnerability, they wouldn't have a chance, and the results are clear. 80% of all the people that have died in Ontario during the first wave of the pandemic were residents in nursing homes, compared to 40%, 38% in the other OECD countries. So we have done shamefully in relationship to long-term care, and absolutely I put the responsibility there squarely on Dr. Williams, squarely on the Premier and Minister Fullerton, who holds that portfolio. I'm sorry.
He's got to go?
Well, we said that publicly many times, but of course that's not happening. And my fear, Christy, my analysis of why it's not happening, and the public better watch this, is that I think we will be... I am very afraid. That the government will try to move us to another channel completely, the channel of vaccines, which is a very important one. But vaccines, by the time we all get vaccinated, is next September. So the channel we need to be now, Christy, is the channel of preventing more deaths right now for the next 4 months of this second wave, because if not, it will be brutal. Not only that we will have more and more people dying of COVID, but also of other conditions, because if the hospitals become overwhelmed, then they will need to cancel yet again the, you know, things that are less urgent. But those things that are less urgent are not frills, are people with cancer, people with cardiac conditions, you name it.
Dr. Doris Greenspoon, we'll have to leave it there for today. Thank you for coming back on the program.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Greenspoon is the CEO of the Registered Nurses Association of Ontario. As you know, they've been highly outspoken about Dr. David Williams, and they've said that he needs to be out of a job, that someone else needs to be at the helm of orchestrating the COVID-19 response in our province. So Dr. Greenspoon there reiterating that call and saying the vaccine is not the silver bullet. We can't wait until everyone is vaccinated. We need to do more right now. 424, Maddie Eisenberg has a look at time saver traffic and weather. When we come back, an update to that story we've been following this afternoon about that restaurant in Toronto that has stayed open in defiance of a public health order. Police moved in today, and now there's been more developments. We'll tell you what's going on this afternoon in just a moment.
You're listening to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Okay, so you know that restaurant in Etobicoke, the one that stayed open, Adamson's Barbecue Joint? Apparently now it's been issued a closure order from Toronto's top doctor. Dr. Eileen Davila has had enough. She said they've got to shut down. That's the whole intention of going into the lockdown. The owner, Adam Skelly, said yesterday he planned to open up shop anyway.
How many people are going to lose everything? They're going to lose their businesses. More people will be out of work. Enough is enough. I complied with the 2 weeks to flatten the curve. I complied again during the second wave when we locked down, when Doug Ford promised us that there would be supporting evidence to shut down the restaurants, bars, and gyms. He didn't provide it. We got something a little bit later talking about outbreaks. But the data from Toronto Public Health that came out 2 weeks ago show that two of the over 10,000 Ontario COVID deaths were linked to bars, restaurants, and retails. So why are we getting singled out and the big multinational corporations are all essential while they're packed?
So they were open today. They served several customers. The counselor for Etobicoke, where the restaurant is located, is on scene.
People are following the rules. Some people don't want to follow the rules. I think this is probably a publicity stunt, like I just said. But I know people are frustrated. Small businesses are frustrated. And this is a relatively new restaurant. So I know everyone's frustrated. But listen, we're all in this together. We have to follow the rules. The sooner we do that, the sooner we'll be out of it. So some people don't want to follow those rules, but we're going to we'll deal with them effectively.
So they've been ordered to shut down. Toronto Mayor John Tory weighing in.
It's been interesting to me as we've gone through the pandemic. There have been times when we've been criticized for a lack of enforcement in terms of how much enforcement people saw. Now there's a criticism being levied for too much enforcement. As you know, I've said repeatedly, I don't direct that enforcement. I don't even really, you know, give them any sense of direction or advice. I offer opinions from time to time. But I do very strongly believe in the fact that the laws must be respected, especially when we're in a situation like this, which, you know, can risk lives, certainly can risk the overall health of the city and the health of its economy, and that the law enforcement people will make whatever decision they make about what to do in this particular instance. But as a general rule, we can't have people just deciding on their own. They're going to take the law into their own hands.
429, that's the situation in Toronto. Coming up on the show, let me ask you a rude question. This is up there, Chris, with asking somebody their age or how much money you make.
Uh-huh.
How much do you weigh and how much has it gone up? I'm just kidding. You don't have to tell me how much you weigh. You don't have to tell me anything, for a matter of fact. You have the freedom to choose. Isn't it beautiful? But seriously, if you feel comfortable, I would love for you to weigh in, pun intended, write in and let me know. Have you gained weight during the pandemic? Has your weight gone up? Chris, roughly 1/3 of Canadians say they are gaining weight as a result of the pandemic. That's according to a new study. It was conducted by Leger and the Association for Canadian Studies. 32% of Canadians are admitting that they're eating more and they're exercising less.
I'm with them.
Are you in that number? You are?
Yes.
Now, why do you think that is? Do you think it's because you're eating more, stress eating, you know, just kind of feeling like you want to eat your emotions, not exercising as much because gyms have been open and closed a couple of times? What is it?
Well, I've been eating my emotions pre-COVID, so that's...
now you load up on the Costco ice cream.
That's pretty much...
How long is this pandemic going on? Give me the Rocky Road. Pass me the Moose Tracks.
But it's also working out, right? Like, I don't know. Yeah. Everything's closed. I don't even if it'd be open, I don't think I'd be comfortable going to a gym. How about you? Mm.
Yeah. So, you know, I'll talk about it coming up, but no, definitely I've gained some weight. I'll reveal how much coming up on the show. Riveting radio, I know. Kind of embarrassing, but you know, here's the thing. It's not really to me about the weight gain. You know, I don't think the weight gain is that important. It's how you feel. And for me, it takes a big toll on my mental health. If I feel like I'm not exercising as much, it's not how the jeans look, it's how I feel between my ears, the headspace that I'm in. So I'd love to hear from you, CFRA Nation. Have you gained weight during the pandemic? Does this study resonate with you? Are you nodding your head as you drive along? Are you in agreement as you're cooking dinner right now at home? Let me know. OttawaNow@CFRA.com. Have you gained weight during the pandemic? And why do you think that is? What's different? Is it psychological? Eating feelings of anxiety? Or is it all just kind of a combination of feeling stress and then the stress is exacerbated by the fact that you can't actually go to the gym sometimes? Or maybe you don't feel comfortable going to the gym. I don't know. Let me know. Write in and we'll get to those coming up later on in the show.
You're listening to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA.
4:37. Welcome back to Ottawa Now. I seem to have struck a chord asking this question. Have you put on some pandemic pounds? Nothing to be ashamed of. Not body shaming. It happens. People gain weight. Sometimes you actually feel healthier at a weight that is more heavy. Depends on your frame. Depends on who you are, how you feel. And, you know, for a lot of people, myself included, I think it's really less about how you look. It's about how you feel. So we'll talk about that coming up. And if you want to call in, you can do that. First of all, we're accepting your emails anytime during the show. OttawaNow@CFRA.com. OttawaNow@CFRA.com. Have you put on weight during the pandemic? Why do you think that is? Is it proximity? The fact that you're right by the kitchen? Is it stress? Is it maybe that you're just less worried about it because you're just trying to chill out and you're trying to be the healthiest version of yourself, which includes some more treats? Or maybe you were on a really strict diet before and then you just thought, it's a global pandemic, whatever, I'm giving it up. I don't know. You tell me. Or you can call in. Call into the show. What's our number again, Chris? I'll get you to turn your microphone on. We have a number you can call in coming up in a moment.
It's 521-TALK.
521-TALK.
521-8255.
Call in. That's coming up in about 6 minutes from now. Meantime, it is 4:40, and there's a lot of talk about vaccinations. The big question is, when will we get them? First of all, Ontario said last week, here is the specific number of vaccinations that we're getting, and we'll be getting them in January. And then the federal government said, not so fast, Ontario, and dumped a bit of cold water all over that, saying it's too soon to say. Today, the Prime Minister was questioned about that. Here's what he had to say.
Canada no longer has any domestic production capacity for vaccines. We used to have it decades ago, but we no longer have it. Countries like the United States, Germany, and the UK do have domestic pharmaceutical facilities, which is why they're obviously going to prioritize helping their citizens first. So Canada did two things over the past months. First of all, we've begun to invest once again in ensuring that Canada will have domestic vaccine production capacity, because we never want to be caught short again without the ability to support Canadians directly. And that will be in place in the coming years. If ever there is another pandemic, we will not be be caught on the wrong foot again.
So essentially, of course, the countries that are producing these vaccines are naturally going to prioritize their own citizens, which means that Americans could be getting the shots in December. Canadians will be watching. They'll be wanting to roll up their sleeves, but we won't be getting it at the same time. When will we be getting it? We don't know. That's what he's saying, which is frustrating for people that are hoping to get the vaccine right away. But I think we all have to have reasonable expectations of this. We don't have the capacity to make the vaccine here in Canada, so now we've got to wait on this. But I really hope it's not the Wild West again, like when it came to PPE, and countries like ours were clamoring to get our hands on vital PPE, and in some cases it was getting held up at the border. So what is the plan when we do get the vaccines? What are the logistics of distributing them and getting them out to the people who need them in Canada?
We have signed strong contracts with various vaccine companies, and we are working closely with allies on ensuring that there is a free flow of delivery of contracts. We know that this is a preoccupation that many people have, which is why it was something that we all talked about on this weekend's G20 virtual summit. It's really important to ensure that everyone gets access to vaccines around the world, because no one place gets through COVID-19 until all places are done with COVID-19.
Joining us once again, I have Dr. Alan Bernstein, a member of Canada's COVID-19 vaccine force and president and CEO of CIFAR, a Canadian-based global research organization. Welcome back.
Thanks, Chrissy. Good to talk with you.
Good to get you back on the program. When do you believe Ontario will be getting the vaccines?
Well, I'm going to restrict my comments to Canada, because Canada has purchased the vaccines, not Ontario. And so there will be a distribution plan, and I'm sure Ontario, once Canada gets them, I'm sure Ontario and the other provinces will get them, you know, roughly in the same time period. The plan, though, will be a discussion based between the federal government and the provinces as to who should get the vaccine first and when that will happen. And so, as the Prime Minister said, we're not going to be first in line because for two reasons, really. One is we have limited manufacturing capacity. And secondly, many of the vaccines that we're hearing about these days, the Moderna one, the Pfizer one, and this week the AstraZeneca one, were not actually made in Canada. They were made in the U.S., Germany, and the U.K. And so naturally, the citizens in those countries are going to get them. I guess the good news, if I can, you know, stress the good news, is there are vaccines. It looks like there's going to be safe and effective vaccines. And we didn't know that a month ago.
Right. So you're saying we're not first in line, but it's just a good thing that we're in line at all and that eventually we will be getting these vaccines.
Yeah, and I think we're going to have a buffet to choose from. I think that's the other piece of good news. We've got two RNA vaccines, and then this week the AstraZeneca result, which is a so-called adenovector. It's a replication. It's a virus, another virus that can't replicate when it gets in us, but it can get in us pretty efficiently and carry that spike gene. That's sort of the target for our immune system. So that's a whole different kind of science platform. And I imagine in the next few weeks, maybe a month, we're going to hear about another kind of science platform vaccine, these protein subunits that companies like Novavax and Sanofi Pasteur are making. So we'll get those trial results. So I think there's overall really good news. And I think it's great that Canadians are impatient to get their vaccination going, because if we're going to actually beat this virus, we have to make sure as many possible people are vaccinated, not just across countries, but within countries as well.
I think people tend to get a bit jumpy when they hear that other citizens in other countries are going to be getting the vaccine ahead of us. Does it concern you at all that because these vaccines are made in different countries, that naturally those citizens will be getting them first and that we'll have to wait?
Well, look, you know, ideally, we'd like to be first in line. Everybody would like to be first in line, but not everybody can be first in line. And even if we had manufacturing capacity here in Canada, not every Canadian would be first in line. You just can't vaccinate 35 million people, you know, next Monday. You know, it's going to take months and months to vaccinate all those people. So there will be a queue. There will be a lineup of countries and within countries. That's just the logistics are just, that's the way it is. But again, the more and more people get vaccinated, the harder it's going to be for this virus to spread. So even if we're not amongst the first, let's say, in Canada to get vaccinated, the number of people infected should start to go down once, you know, a million people or so are vaccinated. We should start to see a drop in the so-called R-naught number, the number that reflects sort of the transmission of the virus from person to person. So, you know, would I like to see everybody in Canada get vaccinated, you know, next Thursday? Absolutely. I'd like us to be first in line, but it's not going to happen like that.
Right, and I understand that we've inked these deals, and I understand we don't have the capacity to make the vaccine in Canada, so we do need to wait on this. But I think it's just concerning when you think back to Canada fighting for PPE, and countries like ours were going up against obstacles trying to get enough PPE. Sometimes it was getting held up at the border. Do we have a guarantee that's not going to happen with these vaccines?
That's a really good question. So I think one of the great lessons that we're learning from this pandemic is that we need to become, well, no country will ever be completely self-sufficient, but we need to become more self-sufficient than we currently are. We've been very dependent on products made offshore, such as vaccines, such as PPEs, for our own market. And so we can't rely on that any longer. And so one of the things that the Vaccine Task Force has been discussing and looking into and have made recommendations on is the urgent need for Canada to develop its own domestic manufacturing capacity for vaccines so that when the next pandemic happens, and it will happen, there will be more pandemics, we will have domestic manufacturing capacity. And if we don't, it's our own fault. We haven't learned the lesson from this one. And I think we're not alone in that. That's if we're any comfort in that regard, other countries have also had PPE problems, and not every country has manufacturing capacity either. You know, it's not just Canada. So I'm not excusing us. That's not the point. I'm not responsible for it. But I do think that we need to learn from this and make sure it doesn't happen again. And so the Vaccine Task Force has been discussing it, like I said. I have made recommendations to the government that this is an urgent requirement. And as the Prime Minister said, there already has been about $140 million put aside to expand a vaccine facility that the National Research Council owns in Montreal. It's called the Royal Mount Facility, so that it can certainly turn out more vaccines than it's capable of doing at the moment.
In the United States, vaccinations are going to start on December 12th. In the UK, they are booking appointments for high-risk patients. So the work has begun, and yet Canada has been pretty silent on talking about how the vaccine candidates would be handed out here. Should we not have a plan? Should we not be hearing more details at this point? What do you think?
Oh, we definitely need to have a plan, and I know that there are lots of discussions going on to actually work out all the details of this plan. The logistics for this are huge. And, you know, here in Ontario, the government has just announced that General Hillier has been put in charge of the logistics for this province. And the federal government is working across the country with each province and the territories to make sure all of this is in place, that there is a plan in every province and the territories. So, yeah, we need a plan. And as soon as we have one, I totally agree with you. Those plans should be made public so we all know where we stand and when to get in line and where to get in line and in what order. You know, should all of us, is it random? Is it going to be alphabetical? No, it won't be that. It should be frontline healthcare workers are the most at risk. Seniors who live in long-term care facilities, people who work in long-term care facilities, et cetera, et cetera. Those are the people who should be in line first. And that's got to be spelled out. And we need a way of identifying those people and making sure that nobody jumps the queue, you know, that people don't you know, misrepresent themselves. So all of that is, it's a huge challenge. And there's also with the Pfizer vaccine, that vaccine has to be kept really cold at minus 70. So there's also a supply chain issue as well on top of all this. So this is a cross-country global effort that needs to be worked out. And every country is dealing with the same challenges. Believe me, I know that. So it's one thing for, you know, a country to say December the 12th, but let's see how smoothly it goes.
Right. It may not actually be December 12th is your point. Dr. Bernstein, thank you so much for coming back on the show. We appreciate your voice on this.
You're welcome.
Dr. Alan Bernstein, a member of Canada's COVID-19 Task Force. And he's the president of CIFAR, which is a Canadian-based global research organization. Coming up in moments, have you gained weight during the pandemic? Let us know, ottawanow@cfra.com, or give us a call right now. We'll take your calls, 613-521-8255, or 1-800-580-CFRA. Give us a shout. Send us an email, call us. We're talking weight, pandemic pounds coming up next.
Be like that. I might be better on my own. I hate you blowing up my phone. I wish I never met you. Sometimes be like that, but I'm not.
You're listening to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Give us a call or send us an email. Let me know. Let's talk weight. Have you gained weight during the pandemic? I know it's kind of a rude question, but we're getting personal today. And there's no shame. I want to say that off the top. 613-521-8255 or 1-800-580-CFRA. Or you can email us, ottawanow@cfra.com. We got a whole bunch of emails on this, Chris. I want to say off the top, let me reiterate for people in the back who didn't hear it the first time.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing wrong with gaining weight. There's nothing shameful about it whatsoever.
Nope.
I have a very staunch opinion on this. Your body fluctuates in weight. You know, you have water weight. People gain weight at different times in their life. This isn't a segment to make us feel terrible, to make us feel bad about our bodies whatsoever. But I'm bringing up weight because I think it's really reflective of how much our lives have changed. And there's this new study that shows over 30% of Canadians say that they've gained weight during the pandemic. And, you know, it can be something simple, Chris, like Maybe your schedule was going to the gym every morning before work and that got disrupted because the shutdowns and openings and shutdowns and openings make you feel anxious about going to the gym. Or maybe your gym hasn't reopened. Maybe your gym has gone out of business. Maybe you're just not going because you're not downtown anymore and that's where your gym is located because you're not going into work. Or maybe it's simply even the routine of packing a lunch and that's gone out the window for a lot of people working from home because now they're just heading to the kitchen and instead of having a fulfilling meal, they're just doing these little dribs and drabs, little snacks here and there. Or perhaps it's a psychological thing. You're stress eating.
Yep.
It could be financial. You've lost your job and you can't afford some of the healthier food that you were eating before. You're eating on a budget. What's going on with you, Chris?
Me, it's a bit of circumstance as well. Like just how it's happened. I've still got my pregnancy weight just because like I, with my wife, I would eat with her. So that was one thing, right? And then after everything closed. And
right.
There is just, you know, there is that nervousness, right, to go out. And mm-hmm. sometimes it's just easier to just, I don't know, go down the chip aisle. that's me.
Chips. Yeah, you know, for me, so I put on about 5 pounds during the pandemic. And the thing about it wasn't so much that my clothes didn't fit or I was feeling that badly about my appearance. It was more that I just wasn't feeling like myself. And you know me, I need to be run, right? Like I'm like a wild animal. If I'm not exercising, if I'm not getting that physical stimulation, then mentally I'm just not feeling like I'm on an even keel.
You don't feel sharp, right?
No, I need to go for a run. I need to go for a hike. I need to hop on my bicycle or hop on my stationary spin bike. That's a really big part of my life. And without that, I start to feel a little bit antsy. I start to feel a little bit jumpy. So, you know, I gained about 5 pounds. I think most of that is gone now. But for me, it was more about how I was feeling and dealing with the stress of work, dealing with the stress of the pandemic. I know I'm not alone. We've got Angela who's on the line. Hi, Angela.
Hi, guys. You're not alone, but I forgot to say, I'm not calling because I've gained weight. I'm calling because I actually lost weight.
So you lost weight.
I'm
was that just due to
there.
The stress? That's okay.
No.
Tell us what's going on.
No, actually, COVID scared the you know what out of me, and I was overweight. I have high blood pressure. I'm on two blood pressure medications, and I'm like, okay, that's it. I'm not working. I'm staying home, and I've lost like 45 pounds. I'm now down one of my blood pressure meds. So,
wow, good for you. That
yeah.
must feel good getting off that medication.
Yeah, and I know, can I just give a shout-out to somebody who inspired me to do
Go
that?
Right ahead.
Her name is Wendy, and she's one of our coworkers at a school that I work at, and she used to run a boot camp 3 days a week in the morning, and she decided to do it virtually. And so 3 days a week, she sends out a YouTube video for all of us. There's probably about 10, 15 women that do it, and we keep each other motivated and inspired. And if it wasn't for her, a lot of us wouldn't be exercising because we're no longer at the gym. So
I love that. Well, good for you for taking that time for yourself, feeling healthy, feeling strong, using the pandemic in a way that feels positive. I know there's actually another person I want to read an email. Thanks for that, by the way. Leslie says she's also lost weight too. She said, I'm drinking less, eating better, and I'm working out at home. So yeah, it really depends on, I guess, how you're using this time or how you're feeling. Sandra says, oh my goodness, I've got the quarantine 15 for sure. I'm trying my best, but not so successful. Liz says, hi, Christy. Absolutely, I've gained weight. Working from home is the issue for me. Less walking throughout the day, and it's easier to grab something from the fridge when I feel hungry. My message would just be, don't feel bad about it. Again, I think weight loss, weight gain, it's all part of life. There's no shame to it. But I do think moving your body is a really important part of your mental health. So for me, it's not so much about the weight gain. It's about sustaining yourself. It's about feeling healthy. And it's about feeling like you've actually put some movement into your day because it's good for you. It's good for you. Not necessarily just for your waistline, but for your overall health. It is 5:02. Thanks for emailing and thanks for calling in. Graham has all the news you need to know. We'll be right back.